I'm pretty sure he's been in trade rumors for 3 years now.
We should try to trade Aaron Gordon. Aaron Gordon's playing really well. We shouldn't trade Aaron Gordon. As soon as he starts to maybe fall off a little bit, what can we get for Aaron Gordon? And they're like, we just go in this circle year after year. Kind of cracks me up.
What's up, basketball fans? You are listening to the Business Casual Basketball Podcast. This is episode 136. We're back here to discuss the trade deadline that's approaching. Next week, believe it or not, is the deadline for NBA teams to make a deal. And we've already seen a couple of trades go down in the NBA. So we're here on the podcast today to kind of cover a couple of the deals that transpired just yesterday in the NBA, as well as some potential deals that could be in the works with some popular names that you guys may have seen in trade rumors. But to help me break down what is going to be going on the trade deadline today is going to be Derek Murray. He is a writer for basketballnews.com, as well as a senior ops analyst for Sports Info Solutions. And if you guys are not familiar with basketballnews.com, you really should dive into their content. They have a lot of great writers, a lot of great podcasters, and they have a lot of great work going on here for the NBA. Derek, appreciate your time here, man, and excited to talk about the trade deadline with you here, which is fast approaching, and I can't wait to see the moves that these teams are going to be making in the next few days.
Yeah, Aaron, I appreciate you having me on. Awesome time here with basketball. You know, you've got March Madness about to start, gearing up, talking about the draft. You've got the trade deadline in the NBA, and you're kind of seeing who's separating themselves as maybe a buyer and a seller. So it's exciting times. But again, I appreciate you having me.
Absolutely, man. My pleasure. Let's take a look at some of the trades that are that have just occurred here in the NBA before we get into some of the popular trade targets. So the first deal I want to discuss with you here is PJ Tucker. And I mean, it has to be, I think since the beginning of the season, we've been seeing this guy in trade rumors. Very stout 3-and-D forward slash center that's been playing for Houston for the past few years. Now he's moving on to Milwaukee, and they're looking for a guy that's going to solidify their lineup. And, you know, it's his deal is intriguing because, you know, he's an expiring contract. It's going to be interesting to see if Milwaukee wants to invest in him past this season. But for now, they parted with DJ Wilson, DJ Augustine, a 2023 first-round pick, and the right to swap with Houston in the future there for one of their picks. So my kind of question with PJ Tucker is, you know, whether he's kind of over the hill a little bit at 35, or was he just not feeling the situation in Houston? Because we have seen in the past that guys are not feeling their situation, so they kind of take their foot off the gas, and you see their percentages and stats start to fall off a little bit. So which side of the fence are you on, Derek, as a regard in regards to PJ Tucker's performance and possibly what he has to offer to Milwaukee here?
This has been a really interesting and trying season down in Houston. I think for a lot of reasons, you know, some things you read in the media, some you won't. A couple weeks ago, I was with some former NBA executives and coaches, and they were talking to me about some of the stuff that was going on down in the locker room there in Houston. And, you know, I can understand why players maybe wanted out. A lot of divisiveness, which I don't think comes as a surprise to a lot of NBA fans. You know, just a lot was going on this season with the shuffling of players last couple of years, you know, raised and lowered expectations. You have a new coach, just a lot of questions going on. So I don't think that Tucker's game has suffered because he can't do it anymore. You know, I want to kind of give him the benefit of the doubt and think, you know, there was a lot of tumultuous nights down there in that organization, in that locker room, and that wears on people. You know, people are just, they're just human beings, and stuff wears on everybody differently. And I think maybe the grind of this season maybe got to Tucker a little bit, and that's probably why we saw the drop in the numbers. So I'm not going to say that he can't necessarily do what he used to anymore. But to your point, you know, he is getting older. You know, how much of that kind of playing style can his body take? We'll yet to see. But I do understand why both teams made this deal. You know, Milwaukee, he's an awesome physical force to bring into the organization. I think him and Giannis actually be really interesting together because they can kind of play each other's positions based on their size. Sure. So I think that gives him a little bit of versatility, closing lineups. I expect him to be in there. I don't think that DJ Augustine leaving Milwaukee, I don't think they'll realize how important he was until after he's gone. You know, even though he only played 19 minutes a game, only had 6 points, you know, he was a reliable veteran, could get you buckets. I think he was like 90% from the free throw line this year. Those are just little things that over the course of the season play into winning ball games. And he provides a lot of winning impact for them, even in small spurts and, you know, limited minutes. So I understand why both teams did the trade. I'm not worried about the pick that Milwaukee gave up. They're 23rd unprotected because I still anticipate they'll be a really good team. I don't think that pick, you know, even barring some injuries, will be probably in the top 20. So I understand giving up that pick as well. I get it for both sides.
Yeah, I mean, I do too, honestly, Derek. And, you know, you mentioned DJ Augustine's performance. You know, you're exactly right when it comes to his free throw percentage. I mean, granted, he didn't take that many free throws per game, but, you know, he's still a 90% free throw shooter regardless and a 38% shooter from three. So in a system that features Giannis, a non-shooter, and some other guys that have a little bit of a difficulty kind of spreading the floor, I mean, that's, you know, definitely a benefit that they're going to miss at some point. Their backup guard situation will be fascinating to watch because they already have Jrue Holiday and DiVincenzo kind of leading the charge as far as guards go starting. And then once you kind of get to the bench unit, it's very thin. You know, you're looking at Pat Connaughton and Brent Forbes, but both of those guys are very limited when it comes to offensive creation, although they are good shooters. So also defensively, they're going to have some problems there. So I'm still a little bit worried about their bench lineup. And I read a piece by Jonathan over at The Ringer earlier today, and he was mentioning that Milwaukee should stay aggressive when it comes to acquiring players to kind of fortify that second unit. And I totally agree with that. But even though they do have some shortcomings on the bench, I mean, their starting lineup is going to be pretty solid. And then their closing lineup is going to be very good too. I believe the net rating of the four-man lineup of Holiday, DiVincenzo, Middleton, and Giannis was plus 11 points per 100 possessions. So you throw in Tucker there to close the games, and it's going to be very stout on defense. And then there's still enough spacing to compensate as well with DiVincenzo, Middleton, Holiday. They're going to be able to keep guys honest. So that's really what I'm looking to see, is kind of how that closing lineup performs, because that's going to be a good indicator of how this team is going to operate once we get to the playoffs, once lineups are shortened and, you know, things kind of get amplified as far as importance. So, you know, you feeling pretty excited about that closing lineup as well, just kind of looking at their versatility and just their ability to kind of lock down on defense. I think it's going to be a huge boon to their team when they're looking to kind of grind out games down the stretch.
Mm-hmm. I do like their closing lineup. Just, you know, any closing lineup with PJ Tucker in it, I'm going to be drawn to. You're going to get your hard-nosed defense. You're going to win the loose balls. So, you know, him being added to that lineup, I love. You know, to your point, I read the Jonathan Charks article as well. Charks is a good friend, so I read all of his stuff. Mm-hmm. Jordan Nwora is somebody he highlights in that piece as a potential solution. I think he called him coming off the bench. Right. You know, they got Nwora, I believe, in the 40s in the draft last year. Yep. And three-point shooter. He's a big, physical kid who can get buckets from the outside. And I think this is his time to step up, because if you look at the, I guess, the rotation or the depth chart kind of down on the back end, him and DJ Wilson would have been kind of competing for minutes. Mm-hmm. So I think with Wilson gone, Augustine gone, you're going to see more Brent Forbes. But I think Jordan Nwora, to Jonathan's point, has an opportunity to step up and provide some offensive versatility for the bench unit and could help them a lot.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. And he's kind of a name that a lot of us forget about. I know for myself, you know, I don't really think of him as being a factor for their lineup. I mean, you know, a mid 40s pick for a title contender is usually a guy that we kind of overlook, but you know, he does have some potential. He's already 22, as Jonathan highlighted in his article, already been through some battles in college. So he's a little bit more experienced. He's not going to be a guy that you need to kind of develop over 2 or 3 years. He should be pretty ready at this point to make an impact. And, you know, even though he's only averaging about 8 minutes per game, he is shooting 50% from three on 1.6 attempts per game. So, I mean, at the very least, even a small sample size, we can kind of see that he has the potential to space the floor and kind of fit into that archetype of, you know, a spacing wing for Milwaukee. So I'm excited to see how he performs. And, you know, we talked about DJ Wilson kind of competing with him for minutes. You know, this is pretty minor, but I know for myself, I was always wanting DJ to kind of get some more run in Milwaukee. Never really saw that, even though I think he has some potential. So as far as Houston goes, that's another piece they kind of bring into their pipeline to develop. And I think they're knocking it out of the park with getting future assets like him and, you know, some of those other guys. Kevin Porter Jr. has been really good so far. Kenyon Martin Jr., a lot of really good tantalizing prospects. So even if they lose Oladipo, who we'll get to in a minute, they're going to be really solid when it comes to, you know, kind of guys bringing up the pipeline, young wings. So that's something else I'm going to keep my eye on. And I think Houston should be applauded for that, even though, you know, the picks are going to be highlighted. You know, we can't overlook a young guy like DJ Wilson being brought into that team, because he should have an opportunity to kind of flourish with them and showcase why, you know, he's, you know, he does definitely has the potential. I think it's too early to give up on him, honestly.
Yeah, he just hasn't been able to showcase what he can do coming out of Michigan. You know, I like the pick when Milwaukee took him. He just hasn't had the opportunity, and it's not his fault. I think he can hit shots. you know, moves a little bit too maybe methodically for me on the court, not quick twitch in any way, which limits some of what he can do. But I think he'll get an opportunity to stretch the floor as a shooter.
Absolutely. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Houston should be excited about getting him, and he should be able to make an impact. Another deal we do have to look at here in regards to yesterday's transactions is the Myers Leonard move. I think regardless of the situation that he's put himself in, I mean, he was already on the trading block. So I think, you know, this deal could have been in the pipeline for weeks. We just don't know that for sure. But he is a $9.4 million potential expiring deal. I mean, there is a $10 million team option for next season that, you know, if he is not moved between now and the trade deadline, I'm sure the team will not pick that up. But, you know, he can't, you know, as far as what he brings to this team, I mean, he's not a part of the future. So the only question with him now is, will he be waived or traded by OKC? They're going to try to trade him. Like I mentioned, you know, it could be an expiring deal. So we could see him move just in regards to that benefit of getting off of some money. I mean, you can't really deny that, you know, this is a move that fits right into what OKC is trying to do with acquire picks, stockpile picks. It continues their theme, and that's another, you know, 2027 second rounder that brings them up to four, maybe even five second rounders, depending on protections of another pick that convey that year. So, you know, kudos to OKC for continuing to gather assets. They moved Trevor Ariza. He's headed to Miami now. That's, you know, another kind of, I think, check on the list for OKC. Get rid of another veteran, continue to rebuild, guarantee the last 2 years of Dort's deal. So they're making some great moves here right now. And, yeah, OKC is, I think, is going to be a force in years to come, because even though they're kind of towards the bottom of the Western Conference now, at some point they're going to cash in on all these assets to kind of pair with SGA, and they're going to be a really special team in the Western Conference. So I like the deal for them, and it's straightforward, but you could definitely see the benefits here.
Yeah, I don't expect Leonard to be with Thunder for the rest of this year. I expect him to be waived. I think this was just about, hey, what can we get for Trevor Ariza? And I think a second-round pick is what you were going to get. I don't think he, you know, hasn't played in some time, but he's a guy that, with his veteran presence, is exactly what the Heat would want. So that deal, it makes total sense for the Heat. It only cost them a second-round pick. And quite frankly, with all the stuff going on in the media and Myers Leonard's comments over the last week, I'm sure that they were probably taking a lot of heat for still having him on the team. So I understand the move. But I expect him to be waived here, barring, you know, a decision that none of us see coming. And then he'll probably test the free agent market this summer and see what he can do if he can still play in the league. So plays right into the, you know, theme, like you said, of a Thunder stockpiling picks. You know, as many as they can get their hands on, they're going to take all of them.
Exactly. And that's a great strategy. I mentioned Houston in another podcast and kind of what they did back before they got James Harden. They took the same approach. They were a good team. They had some solid pieces, and then they acquired some picks, and they kind of cashed that all in for James Harden. So I wouldn't be surprised if in the next 2 or 3 years we see a similar move for OKC to kind of acquire a special player to help them really take a next step in the conference. But in regards to this deal, I mean, that's not really the interesting part of this. You know, what most people are going to be focusing on is the impact of Trevor Ariza for Miami. And there's no secret about this. Miami has been searching for a serviceable wing to kind of replace that Jay Crowder they lost, you know, coming off of that finals run. Unfortunately, Mo Harkless hasn't been the answer for them. So hopefully Trevor Ariza does have some left in the tank. I believe he does. You know, his role is not going to be substantial. He's going to be a wing to come in and give them 20, you know, in the low 20s as far as minutes, and be another glue guy, another good veteran to place in the lineups for Miami. So I like the deal. You know, PJ Tucker always looked like kind of an expensive pickup. You know, they wanted a first for him. They got a first. So Miami kind of adjusted their focus over there to getting Ariza. And I think that's going to be a benefit for them, even though it's not one of the flashy moves. It does fortify their depth, because Miami has had some issues here, just kind of replacing what they lost in free agency with Jay Crowder. So like the pickup for them. I don't think a 27 second round pick is going to be anything they even remotely miss right now. And, you know, he should be a good pickup for them if he can at least hit threes at a league average clip. So another question I was thinking about here is kind of in regards to like Iguodala, because, you know, you bring in Ariza, and then it kind of makes me think, is Iguodala expendable? And, you know, it's going to be a really complicated matter, because Iguodala has a team option left for next season. So I'm not sure if he'll be able to be traded without his consent. So that kind of throws his role into doubt a little bit here. I'm not sure if he's going to get a lot of minutes. I know right now he's injured, so it doesn't really matter, but I am interested to see how they kind of balance those two guys out, because they have a similar role, similar age, similar weaknesses and strengths right there. So, you know, when it comes down to it, you know, do you see one of these guys kind of taking over the spot of the other? I mean, could Ariza kind of take over the spot that Iguodala has in the lineup? You know, any thoughts on how that might play out?
I don't necessarily think you'll see Ariza, you know, take his role or spot, or even as a, I don't see him being brought there as a replacement, maybe like placeholder is a better way to put it. Cause yeah. He gave up a lot to go get Iguodala last year. So I don't think it's a guy where you can say, oh, we got that little bit of value from you, now we're here to replace you. I don't think you can do that with him. Like you said, he's on a team or a player option. So he's not going to go anywhere at this point in his career. He's going to opt in and take that money. So I think Ariza, I believe it's an expiring deal. I don't remember the contract, but you know, if it's expiring, I see it more as a placeholder for when Iguodala gets back. I'd be shocked if they were on the court at the same time. But I think having, you know, both of them always in rotation with their experience as veterans and championship presence, I think can only help the Heat, as long as those rotations are used kind of correctly, just because, like you said, they are both, you know, on the older end of the spectrum for players. So I don't think you're going to get a ton of minutes out of either one, but both can be very valuable.
Absolutely. And, you know, you spoke on Trevor Ariza. He is an expiring deal at $12.8 million. So definitely some spaces to be opened up for Miami looking to next season. And, you know, even though they don't have the option now to go after Giannis, you know, their prized, you know, big fish, they are going to have some other players, maybe some second or third tier players they can chase in free agency with some cap room. But yeah, I definitely agree with what you're kind of mentioning, what Ariza could bring to this team. And I think it's kind of like one of those like low risk, high reward moves. You know, you move off of a second round pick that's not going to have any kind of bearing on this team in the immediate future. Not something that they really kind of prioritize for a guy that's going to come in. And, you know, the Heat are all about this culture. We've heard about it all the time. And they want to bring in guys that they know they can count on. They're going to show up every day, be about, you know, doing their work, being pros. And Ariza fits that bill to a T. So, you know, in regards to everything they're looking for, it looks like a good pickup. And I have no doubt that he's going to play a role for them, even though it may not be a lot of minutes per game. He's definitely going to have a nice impact for them.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm pretty sure also have some players that haven't been moved yet, but are in a lot of trade rumors here. So we definitely have to cover that here real quick. The first of which is Aaron Gordon.
As soon as he starts what can we get for Aaron Gordon? I was kind of like, what to say? Seems like the guy who's named after year. Every single year. I saw a picture on Twitter the other day. It made me crack up. It's like a cycle of the Orlando Magic fans that said, we should try to trade Aaron Gordon. Aaron Gordon's playing really well. We shouldn't trade Aaron Gordon. As soon as he starts to maybe fall off a little bit, what can we get for Aaron Gordon? And they're like, we just go in this circle year after year, kind of cracks me up.
Every time, man. It's definitely like clockwork. It's a routine that we go through every year. Could this be the year he finally gets moved? You know, we're going to have to wait and see. But the benefit of a team looking to acquire Aaron Gordon is, of course, you know, he's a very solid starting level four. I don't think he's going to be any more than that at this point of his career, you know, unless something crazy happens. But, you know, $18 million this season drops to $16 million next season. You know, very unique structure of a deal we don't see very often in guys that are not even in his prime yet. So, you know, for a guy that's in his mid-20s, you know, his contract's going to drop next year. He is averaging a career high in assists at 4 per game and then 36% from 3, you know, very serviceable. It's going to be he's a very intriguing target for a few teams. And I think Minnesota and Boston in particular are two teams I have my eye on. I think Minnesota could really use a guy like this. I mean, they definitely have a hole at the 4. Could be a very nice addition next to Towns, you know, another guy that can space the floor in certain situations, but he's athletic. He can run the floor. You know, he has some playmaking chops that are starting to really show themselves after, you know, being in the league for several years. You know, he kind of fits the timeline for Towns a little bit better. I mean, they're similar ages. So, you know, I could see that definitely developing. And then for Boston, I mean, they, you know, they're missing Gordon Hayward. They're a little bit light on depth. Tatum and Brown definitely have a heavy load to bear every night. So I can see how that can impact both teams there. You know, how are you feeling about those potential destinations for him? Do you have any other in mind that could really use the services of Aaron Gordon right now?
I think Boston does make sense. It's just always hard to project as if Boston's going to do anything at the trade deadline. You know, I think somebody put an article out the other day about how they're always close to doing a deal, but then the deal never gets done. So like, it's hard to predict anything with including Boston. I think an interesting one for Aaron Gordon would be Portland. I think Portland could make some sense. Not sure what exactly it would take to make the money work. I'm not super familiar with their books. But, you know, right now you've got Derek Jones Jr., Robert Covington, and Melo kind of as the three fours, if you will, with Nasir Little as well. But that's where I think Gordon could come in. I mean, if you have a lineup of, you know, Derek Jones Jr., Robert Covington, and Aaron Gordon, maybe instead of Cantor or, you know, Giles at the five, I mean, you've got a really, really athletic lineup. Guys who could score multiple ways. So I don't know what the money would take, but that's a place that I think it could work out well.
I could see that. You know, John Collins not being a factor for the team, and it seems like almost 2 years now, you know, they really do have a need there on the front line. Nurkic being out definitely kind of amplified some of the shortcomings of their, you know, their front court. Covington and Derek Jones have been good this season. I mean, I think their impacts have been pretty close to what they expected, signing them signing Derek Jones in free agency and then trading for Covington. But yeah, definitely having a guy like Aaron Gordon, I think he would fit perfectly with this team. You know, he slot him in at the four. I mean, he's going to feast off of looks created by Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum. He's not going to be called on to do a ton, although in certain situations, he can kind of provide for himself a little bit, create a little bit, you know, hit the open three, you know, definitely be a lob target. So I could see him with that team for sure. Definitely an interesting target. And, you know, for Aaron Gordon, I think this is kind of like a time of his career. I'm sure he's ready to win. I'm sure he's ready to move on to an environment where he can still be a starter, still play a decent role, but, you know, really experience what it means to, like, make the playoffs and really be a competitive team. Orlando's trending in the wrong direction. I think their focus is starting to shift a little bit. They have Fultz and they have Isaac, but it's been reported that beyond those two players, like, everybody's available. So this could be the year where Orlando kind of starts to change their approach a little bit. And I really feel like it's about that time. They've rode this core to death. Fournier, having Gordon there, Vucevic. It's just not really going to work in terms of what the Magic are trying to do. So what better time than now to ship him out? I think his value is at a pretty good level. He has missed some games due to injury. But you know, all things considered, I think, you know, Gordon be a great pickup. And I think Magic can get a decent amount of assets back for him, which I think would appease both sides in terms of what they need right now.
Yeah, for sure.
Listen, I love podcasting. Who doesn't? The process is great until you get to the part where you have to edit and distribute your podcast. It's time consuming and we all love convenience. Well, here's the most convenient option possible. It's called Anchor. There's creation tools in the app that will allow you to record and edit right from your phone, tablet, or computer. It will distribute your podcast for you on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other popular platforms. You can make money from your podcast with minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go to the free Anchor app or anchor.fm right now to get started. And trust me, you won't regret it. Another name we're looking at here is Oladipo. Another name that's been in trade rumors for a while. I'm sure you remember back down in the bubble, Oladipo was seen talking to the Heat. You know, he's made some comments and people were really trying to get him to just say he doesn't want to be there. And he hasn't really said it, but he kind of mentioned himself. He didn't want to be in Indiana. You know, he got shipped out to Houston, and now he's in a position where he doesn't really fit what they're trying to do. You know, Oladipo is in his late 20s. Houston is rebuilding, it looks like, getting assets. So this is the prime time for them to ship him out. And some people think that he can't reclaim his past form. I actually am of the opposite camp. I think he still has a lot to offer. His last five games, he's averaging 27 points, 4 boards, 5 assists, shooting 36% from three here. So I really think he has something to offer to teams looking to acquire a starting level guard. I think he could still get back to all-star caliber he was before. I don't think Houston is going to want him around. They can offer, you know, 4 years, $151 million, 5 years, $195 million in free agency, but I don't think he's a priority for them. So I think another team, maybe in Miami, Denver, someone could come along and really make a nice offer for Houston. And Houston seems to want more assets, so I think that's the route they're going to go. How do you feel about, you know, the chances of him being traded and maybe where he can end up after this trade deadline?
I do think that by him turning down the extension, it would shock me if he stayed in Houston for very long, because the value for him, you know, even coming off the injury, like you said, he's playing very well. And people like Victor Oladipo. Like, he and I were with the Thunder at the same time. Really like the guy, like a pleasure to have in the organization. So, he's a guy that I think people are going to want to go get. I think some teams that, make sense, like you said, the Heat could make quite a bit of sense. The roster, he would fit in very, very well there. I think he'd fit in with the culture and could really help them win.
Definitely.
One team where I don't know how to make the money work because most of their contracts are so big. He in Philadelphia, I think, could be a killer. I think he could put them over the top based on their roster, give them that scoring punch from the two. And he'd line up versatility as well because he can handle the ball. He can play off the ball, a little bit of everything. Big physical guard. I think that works. And then the last one, another team that we kind of always recently see trades projected for is Dallas. A versatile guard who can play next to Luka, I think can make sense. And I think you could pay him too, because I don't think we're in the year where Luka's getting his max yet. If you choose him over maybe Porzingis as your long-term option, I could see that makes sense with the lineup. You'd score a lot of points. The question is, they gave up so much for KP. Can you really justify moving away from him, at this point? I think it's probably too early to punt on that. But depending on, the internet's a wild place. You read a lot of things from Mavs fans. So some of them are already done with Porzingis. Some of them want to keep him. But I think depending on if you can make the money work, he and Luka together could be really, really nice.
Oh, you really hit on a good point there, Derek. You go to Dallas Twitter, and I know a few people on that side of Twitter. The people I know personally definitely are a little bit more level-headed. But, you go on Twitter, and, man, you see some people that are ready to just punt completely on him. And I can see I can understand the frustration. I mentioned his situation, I think, either last week or the week before on my podcast. But for him, it really comes down to health. And it's frustrating when you have a player that's just not available. And I can speak to that being a Heat fan and seeing Winslow miss so many games last season before he was traded. It's just you want to see guys active. You want to see them contribute, especially when they have a high salary like that. It's tough to see them in and out of the lineup. So, I get it. But I do agree. I don't think Dallas is going to give up on that experiment just yet. Maybe another season or two, maybe they reconsider. But for now, I think he's pretty safe. But, you mentioned the Sixers as a trade target. And they actually do have a lot to offer. They have some nice young pieces. They have Thibault. They have Maxey. Danny Green is salary filler. They have a lot of picks. Looking at their future picks here, they have most of the first round picks for the next 4 years. So they can offer some of the first that Houston is inevitably looking for. They have second round picks to offer. They have nice young players. They have veterans to make the salary work. They have all the pieces to make a really nice trade. So
it's just another one of those situations where are you willing to deplete your bench to have a killer starting five and a killer closing lineup? Because if you move some of those pieces that Houston would want, their bench would be very, very, very thin.
That's true. It comes down to depth. And, for a team like that, I think they might prioritize that a little bit more. They are at the top of the East right now, right there with Brooklyn. So I think they're less inclined to make a big move just because the pieces are kind of fitting together very well. And then seeing as they came off last season where they underperformed, I'm sure they're very wary of making any big moves, because they've seen the effect of fit, both positive and negative.
Well, it's crazy. People think you can just throw teams in or guys into different organizations, trade them, it fits here, trade them, it fits here. I mean, assimilating into a whole new organization with a new group of teammates, like, it is not easy. And you don't win championships without chemistry. And throw in even the best of teammates, the best of guys in your locker room in the middle of the year, it changes everything. Even if they're not a problem or, causing any issues in the locker room, it's just not the same anymore. So, that's why I wouldn't anticipate Philly making a big move of any kind, because what they have right now is working. And I think to mess with that would probably hurt them more than help them.
For sure. And we kind of discussed Dallas and Philly for having reasons not to do this deal. I can see Denver possibly doing this deal. That'd probably be my number two if it's not Miami. They definitely have some assets to offer. They have some guys like Gary Harris to make the salaries work, to Michael Green. They do have some picks to offer as well. So, that's a potential destination. If you pair him with having a guy like Jamal Murray, you have Michael Porter Jr. The great thing about Oladipo as well is that, he's a two-way player. And as we know, Denver has not particularly been a strong defensive team the past few years. So having a guy like that next to Jamal to kind of take on the really explosive perimeter assignments would definitely be an advantage and offset a little bit of that defense you lose by having a guy like Michael Porter in the lineup. So That's a trade I would actually kind of like to see now that I think about it. And I think it's possible. Maybe not the most likely, but I would say it's possible for a variety of reasons.
The thing is, if I'm Houston, I'm not doing that deal if I'm not getting Porter Jr. back. Mm. And that's where Denver really has to look in the mirror and say, what do we value here? Because Porter's looked really good recently. I was playing really good basketball. So if I'm Houston, I'm either getting Porter in a pick or I'm getting Hampton and multiple picks. I also really like Zeke Nnaji. I think Nnaji was a terrific draft pick for them this past year. So if you're Houston, say, hey, I'll take Hampton, Nnaji, and, you know, I don't know what else to make the money work kind of thing. But I think Porter would be really tough to lure, but Houston would probably take the stance of, you know, you're not getting Vic if Porter's not coming back. So that would be the interesting conversation for me.
It would. That would potentially swing trade talks and once he's in the mix. And I think at this point, Denver might actually say, I mean, it really depends on, you know, how they feel about Porter's development. I mean,
Think they can go win a title, if they think if you add Victor Oladipo to this team, we can go to the finals.
Right.
Then I believe that you do it.
For sure. But
that's another one of those things. You look at the West, you're like, man, this West is brutal. Like, it is tough. I mean, how confident can you really be? And no matter who you are, how confident can you be to say, if X, we can get through the top? That's a tough call to make internally.
It really is. And the flip side of that, of course, there's concerns that, you give up a prospect by Michael Porter. But, I mean, Denver is quickly approaching win now mode with Jokic playing the best ball of his career. You know, he's in his mid-20s now. I mean, officially, Jamal and Jokic, they're not quote-unquote young anymore. We usually have that cut off at about 25, and then you're kind of more established. You're kind of a vet at that point. So they're in a phase now where I think that winning is taking a priority over just development. So they could see that Michael Porter is coming along, but if you have the opportunity to get a guy like Oladipo that has all-star potential next to two other all-stars, maybe you feel like that puts you over the top, and guys like that don't become available every day. So that's another reason why they could make the deal. But, a lot of reasons for both sides, but I think inevitably Oladipo does end up somewhere else. I don't think Houston is the place he wants to be. And I think we're going to see a similar situation to like PJ Tucker. It's a good team. It's a good situation, but it doesn't fit his timeline and what he prioritizes right now. Another name here that, he's a little bit younger on the timeline. So Oladipo is ready to win. He's been in the league quite a few years now. John Collins is on the other side of the spectrum. This is his fourth year. He's approaching restricted free agency. It's a different dynamic here as far as trades go, because it's going to be mostly picks and filler, because, he's only making $4 million this year. Oladipo's at 21. So we're talking about a guy that's, you're taking a minimum salary and you might double or triple that and you have John Collins' salary. So for Atlanta, I think they're going back and forth on this. Like, I don't envy being in that front office, because you're looking at a guy that has so much talent, and he actually really fits well with Trae Young and some of their other pieces on the team. But there has been a bit of turmoil on that team, and his role has been questioned. He's had some, ups and down times with the team. So, Atlanta really has to weigh the risk of losing him in restricted free agency with a crazy offer sheet and keeping him along for the run, giving him a huge contract, and, just maybe regretting it later. So, any thoughts on how Atlanta might approach the situation? I mean, you think it's more likely he moves on, they move him, or maybe stay put, because, he does fit the timeline of this team and he is, extremely gifted as a player.
Collins is really interesting. I think, there was a lot of reported turmoil around the Hawks earlier in the year. Mm-hmm. This player doesn't like this player. Collins doesn't like him. Trey doesn't like him, kind of thing. A lot of names that I respect, in the Hawks community, they were really fed up with that. They were really tired of reading all this kind of plugged in negativity. So it was hard for me to sit there and I don't know what to think. Like, how real is this? There are writers with information that I trust all the time. There are writers where maybe I want to fact check or double check, where they're hearing their information. I don't know if there's this urge to get Collins out of Atlanta. I think if there is a reason to kind of hurry that up, it's because we've reached a time, you look at the books, hey, we have to start paying somebody. We can't just keep everybody on their rookie deals. We can't keep everybody on these small contracts. So maybe if you look around the locker room and think, okay, Collins is the guy that we would trust to move or we want to move, then that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it's going to depend on if the team thinks Onyeka Okongwu, the rookie from USC, is ready to play. I think he deserves some more minutes. I think he's going to be a very, very good power forward in the league for a while. So I read the last thing, at least information I have, the Hawks do not want to move him at this deadline, Collins, but I think I'd love to see him up in Minnesota if they do make a deal. I think up there, because right now I think they have Vanderbilt and Jaden McDaniels kind of playing the four. McDaniels has been awesome for a rookie. His defense is really coming along. Mm-hmm. Vanderbilt's actually been decent this year. But I think you add a guy like John Collins to that where he and Cat can play inside out. I mean, that would be really, really nice.
Absolutely.
They're just organizational timeline. I just don't know if that's a deal that they would want to do. You look at their team, I mean, I think they're 9-31 today. You're probably going to get a really good draft pick in an absolutely loaded top five of this draft. John Collins probably makes you good enough, at least to an extent. Maybe you slip out of that top five. So I think if the fit could work, especially for over the next couple of years, but I don't know if it makes sense for Minnesota to actually do it.
Yeah, you bring up some good points here. You know, for Minnesota, it's a difficult situation because they are kind of stuck between two worlds. They definitely have some young talent. Anthony Edwards is very young as a rookie, and you know he has so much potential to kind of discover and tap into. But on the other hand, you have a guy like Towns. He's already ready to win. You know, he's been in the league for a few years now. He's on his second contract. The time is ticking to build a contender because you lose a guy like Towns. I mean, that's going to set you back quite a ways. The Timberwolves are no stranger to this. They lost Kevin Garnett back in the day. They lost Kevin Love. I believe they traded Kevin Love. But the fact of the matter is, you know, those guys were discontent in their situations because Minnesota couldn't deliver on a promise to win. So now they're kind of facing the same situation. You know, as you mentioned, another pick is in the pipeline. This is a great draft. They could add another great piece, but you have Towns. I'm sure there's already kind of ideas in his head of maybe this isn't the best situation for me. Phoenix kind of figured it out with Devin Booker. Milwaukee did with Giannis. But, you know, there's for every story like that, there's a Pelican story where you lose Anthony Davis. They just kind of check out. They're ready to leave. So, you know, even though I think this is only like the second year of a five-year contract for Cat, it's never too early to start. And the timer starts faster and faster now. So, adding Collins is, I think it's a dream fit. I think they would be an incredible fit together. But, yeah, like you said, they're kind of stuck. They're almost caught between two realities.
They are. So, I mean, their pick, I believe, is top four protected. I think if it falls to five, it goes to Golden State. Mm-hmm. If you add Collins, even if you win five or six games more than you would, you know, through the remainder of this year, that pick – doesn't, you know, maybe it conveys over to Golden State. I mean, at that point, you're a whole year behind on the timeline already, you know? So it's kind of, would you rather have John Collins or a top three pick in this class at this point is how I would kind of look at it. And
yeah,
I mean, both have their pros and cons, but like you said, I think in the immediate future, it's about keeping Towns happy.
For sure. And, you know, being competitive is, I think, the best way to do that. But as you said, easier said than done. You know, picks are always nice, especially in this draft where you could have a franchise star in the making, for sure. One last situation I want to discuss with you here, Derek, is the Boston situation. Another team that's been linked to trade rumors for a long time. We mentioned this a little bit earlier. You know, there's a difference between rumors and actually executing. They were rumored in the Anthony Davis trade. It seems like they're rumored in almost every trade. Miles Turner, you know, they were rumored to get him back in the offseason. And now they're in a situation where I think they need to make a trade. They had a terrible loss the other night to the Cavaliers. I believe it was last night as of this recording. And I mean, they have games where they look great. Tatum is on, Brown is on, Kemba's contributing. But you know, I think the free agent signings haven't panned out. Tristan Thompson, Steph Teague haven't been the players they thought they would be. So now they're left with a depth discrepancy. Like they're lacking in that department. So they're trying to rely on guys like Romeo Langford to kind of come in, Kevin Pritchard to come in and really like deliver on that bench production. And it just hasn't been there. I mean, Tice has been up and down. So I think they're really just putting a lot of pressure on Tatum and Brown to bail them out of games. And at some point, it's not really going to fly, especially in the playoffs. I think they're a tier behind Definitely a tier behind Philly in Brooklyn. And you can even throw in a case for if they play Miami again, that might not end up going well for them. So at this point, it looks like they have a need for a big man, a serviceable guard slash wing could really help them also. You know, they drafted Aaron Naismith. You know, he's, you know, going to take some time to get going. So I'm just wondering who they can target to fill some roles and reclaim their spot among the best in the East, because Tatum and Brown, you know, you're kind of already in a spot where you want to win, you want to compete. They tasted victory in the Eastern Conference Finals for several years now. They want to make good on that potential. So I just get to thinking what they can do to kind of shore up that team and that depth. You know, anybody come to mind for you off the bat that can help them alleviate that need?
It would take a lot to get either one of these guys, but I think Miles Turner and Vucevic are the two that I would target for players that I think could play for you for at least a little bit. You know, I don't know what their next contracts will be like. You know, they're both getting paid pretty well now. I think Turner's probably more affordable than Vucevic if I remember the contracts correctly. Mm-hmm. But I think both of them could really put Boston over the top. And a third guy, you know, I'm not sure if New York would be willing to part with him, but a guy that I've seen here in Oklahoma City play really well last couple of years is Nerlens Noel as an anchor in that defense. Mm-hmm. So, again, he's not going to get you a ton of offense like Vooch and Turner would, but I think he's a guy that you can put down there at the five and can protect the rim and give you good versatility and energy. I think those three guys kind of stand out to me. You know, an interesting one, I know the Spurs are trying to move on from Aldridge. I don't know how that works. I don't know if that would work in Boston, but it's another big you would consider on the market that I wonder if they're talking about that at all.
Yeah, those are great names to bring up. And the beauty of the names is – the fact that they all fit into that trade exception that the Celtics created with moving on from Gordon Hayward. So now you're looking at Miles Turner as a target, $18 million a season for the next 3 years. That's a very team friendly.
That is team friendly.
Extremely team friendly. You know, no escalations in the contract. I'm sure he has some incentives in there, but even then, very solid deal for a guy that, you know, is in contention for Defensive Player of the Year. He has a similar profile to but defensively to a guy like Rudy Gobert. And we know how much Gobert is getting paid and could get paid in the future. So that's something to consider. And then looking to Vucevic, you know, he has a similar descending contract like Aaron Gordon. So he's at 26, but it does go down to 24 and 22 for the next 2 years. So another pretty team-friendly contract. He's an all-star, so he's paid appropriately. You know, it also fits in that trade exception. You know, the trade exception, I believe, is $28 million. Vucevic is 26. So if the Magic really prioritize turning this thing around into a rebuild, which I really think they should at this point, Boston makes sense as a trade partner. You know, I believe they have most of their first round picks. When it comes to matching the salary, that could be a little bit more difficult. But I'm sure they're doing their best to acquire a guy like Vucevic or Turner, because that center position has been an area of need. Although Robert Williams has been making noise of late, they still have a need there as of now.
And I'm never one to say, you know, punt on your future and mortgage your future and trade all your draft picks. But Boston's, you know, Tatum and Brown, they're still so young. They're so good already where I think getting a center of that caliber is probably one of the few situations where I would be okay unloading at least quite a few picks, maybe some of my young guys to try to make it work.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, for Boston, this is where they find themselves now. You know, I think it's better than the Timberwolves situation because they have two players kind of approaching their prime, but they're a little bit better situated to kind of compete. But, you know, I think this is where you start to kind of cash in on your assets a little bit because you definitely have an opening, and openings don't appear every day. So you have to take advantage of it. But I think that's about it for our conversation here, Derek. I want to thank you again for offering your time and, you know, your expertise to this, because I know you're very deep in the NBA world and you're plugged in here. So thanks for offering your input here and opinions. I really appreciate it. And, you know, continued success to you and the basketball news team. You guys have great content over there. So wish you all the best for sure.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Curious to see what moves happen, and especially curious to see if that PJ Tucker one works out. Like that stands out to me. I want to see how that looks in Milwaukee. But again, thank you so much for having me on the pod, on the show. Look forward to doing it again.
Sure thing. Absolutely. For Business Casual Basketball fans, you can find us on social media at BC Basketball 2. That's Twitter and Instagram. bcbasketball.info is our website if you'd like to check out some of our blog posts and other resources online. So thanks again, everybody, for offering your time. We'll be back next week with some more NBA analysis. Enjoy this NBA season, and we'll be back covering the NBA a little more next week before you know it. So take care, guys.